Good evening. It's Dan one more time. I guess this makes three podcasts for a day. On Wednesday, January the 9th, 2019, I actually had a little bit of optimistic news today, or at least sort of optimistic. I had a contact with a recruiter for a tech job. The recruiter didn't seem like too terrible a person. Which is the best you can hope for these days. He spoke English. He actually cared about the English in my resume, which I thought was interesting. And, you know, I should probably polish up my resume, but I gotta be honest with you. My resume's always been something that I just haven't been that good at perfecting. Don't really want to go into it. But yeah, I had some kind of good news today, and who knows, maybe this means I'll find a job before I'm homeless. That would be awesome. But if everything goes perfectly, I still think it's a 50-50 affair. But it's still better than just, you know, expecting to end up in the streets. And that's all I want to say about that. The topic for this podcast, this little Saigon report, has to do with gun control. And it came up because this afternoon I was reading an article on Zero Hedge. A Paul Craig Roberts essay. Just so you know, Paul Craig Roberts, I think he was a deputy undersecretary or some type of a treasury official in the Reagan administration. Politically, I think you would probably classify him as kind of conservative in a way, but he also has some beliefs that are, you know, a little bit liberal. I don't agree with everything he has to say, but I do think he has a voice that needs to be heard. It's one of those critical voices, a lot like James Howard Kunstler, if you've not read that guy as well. These folks are old enough and articulate enough that, yeah, you should hear some of their wisdom. They've seen a few things. So Paul Craig Roberts, PCR, was, you know, wrote an essay on gun control, and he laid out all the statistics about, you know, how many people are murdered, how many people are murdered from the black rifle, the AR-15, blah, blah, blah. And with respect to the gun control debate, because for me it's more of a philosophical topic than some type of social engineering affair, I'm interested in the numbers, but at the same time, I'm very skeptical of the numbers. I think that there are reasons why, as I've pointed out in other podcasts, that the government will both over-report and under-report a statistic based upon policy. For example, let's say you live in a city like Seattle, and let's say that there's something called community-based reporting or unified crime reporting that basically consolidates reports of crimes from local police departments, sheriff's departments, et al., all the way up to the FBI. That's what happens, okay? All of these FBI statistics come from data that gets compiled by local police, local sheriffs, local officials, and in this case, Seattle. Now, Seattle is known for many, many things, but it is clearly one of those cities on the West Coast that has a kind of real estate economy going on, you know, house flipping and whatnot. So the question is this: if you have a police officer that is compiling these statistics and, you know, some member of the city council or the mayor or someone else says, hint, hint, we want property values to stay high because we want property taxes to stay high, hint, hint, is it more or less likely that that cop, that police officer, will do everything in their power to reclassify or underreport crime? In my humble opinion, and again, this isn't a radical perspective, I think that there are a lot of perverse incentives for police departments to underreport crime. I am an anarchist, so I'm not a big fan of the cops anyways, but if I were quote-unquote a status, like if I pretended to be a limited government status for a second and put on my pretend Thomas Jefferson hat, I would say that the only reasonable way to collect criminal statistics would be through some type of ombudsman mechanism, And if you don't know what an ombudsman is, it's basically a civilian representative that is independent of an authority and therefore has the ability to report on something accurately. Now, of course, if this person is elected, they could suffer from the same defects of either underreporting or overreporting based upon the same perverse incentives. But again, in theory, if you set it up correctly, and I think there's a way to do it, you could at least get to something closer to accurate. So when it comes to unified crime reporting in the United States that gets compiled by the FBI, I'm incredibly skeptical. But if we believe the FBI, and I don't, but if we do, the number of people murdered in 2017 in the United States of America, the total was 17,284. Now, just to put that in perspective, about every year, and I think this number is still accurate, every single year, about 100,000 people die in the United States just because they chose to go to a hospital and assumed that hospitals were not incompetent, which means that every year hospitals kill through incompetence, whether it's surgeons who pull out the wrong organ, or whether it's docs who prescribe the wrong drugs, or somebody forgot to check their infectious disease report, which, boy, doesn't that bring back great memories of working at Harborview in informatics. But yes, every year, 100,000 people die in this country. That's more than three times as many U.S. soldiers that were killed in the Korean War because of incompetence at hospitals. So yes, in 2017, 17,000 people and change were murdered in this country. And in that same year, five times that number plus were killed by hospitals. I just want to give some perspective. So even if you believe this number, you need to really consider other facts. About 40 to 50,000 people die on the highways every year. Okay? Now, again, I'm an anarchist, anarcho-capitalist. I believe in free enterprise and freedom. So I don't give a fuck if you want to drive a car. Although, frankly speaking, the quote-unquote car economy is highly subsidized, which you should read Corporate Welfare. But, you know, hey, if you want to drive a car, fine. But if you care about saving lives, and you're one of these liberal, squishy, woolly-hearted, deformed mental midgets, then why don't you look at cars first? Because that's a twofer. Okay, first, by attacking the quote-unquote car culture, you're helping with this whole greenhouse thing. And I don't believe in that human-caused climate change bullshit, but assuming you're some liberal douche and you do, it's a twofer. You get to take out the greenhouse effect, and you get to save 40,000 people every year, which, oh, by the way, probably includes thousands of children. But again, this isn't about protecting children. This isn't about saving lives. It's about power. So whenever you hear a gun control person talking about saving children, you really need to check the numbers yourself. So in 2017, 17,000 people and change were murdered in the United States of America. Of those murders, 7,000, the leading weapon was handguns. Wasn't AR-15s, wasn't any kind of rifle, black rifle, assault weapon. I don't know what the fuck an assault weapon was. I was an officer in the United States Army. I can tell you there are carbines. I can tell you that there are weapons that have a selector for fully automatic, which makes them machine guns. Okay? Carbines have been legally purchased in this country for over 100 years. I'm going to repeat that statement. Semi-automatic carbines have been legal to buy in the United States of America in various dangerous calibers, including shotgun calibers, for about a century. So when somebody tells you, well, shit, Dan, these aren't weapons like they used to have, well, you need to research your firearms, because there was a revolution in firearms both during and just after the Civil War in the United States. A couple things happened. One was the standardization of manufacturing, and the Colt pistol is one of the good examples of that. And the other was not simply cartridge ammunition, but smokeless cartridge ammunition, which means propellants that were not black powder. These were revolutions, and these happened about 20 years before the turn of the last century, which means in the 1880s and 1890s. So this type of weapon's been around for a while. Lewis and Clark brought a carbine on their exploration in the early part of the 19th century. It was an air rifle, but it was a repeating air rifle. Was it semi-automatic? Technically not, but it was a repeater, and it had very few controls for repeating action. So basically, they had an air rifle that could kill Native Americans, that could fire many, many rounds rapidly, in, you know, at the beginning, essentially, of the 19th century. So the fear of the semi-automatic, which is what this is, the fear of the AR-15, is a fear of the semi-automatic, is a bit ridiculous. But yes, going back to the numbers, in 2017, roughly 7,000 people were murdered with handguns. Another 3,000 were murdered with some type of firearm, not described. 1,500 and change were killed with knives or shivs, and you know I love that, the shiving. And then there's other change, but you get to basically rifles, and rifles in this bar chart. 403 people were killed, murdered, in 2017 using rifles, which basically means guns like the AR-15. I am not dismissing 400 people. I'm really not. I know there are, you know, slightly switching topics. I know there are a lot of people who don't give a shit about Fukushima. They'll keep eating their crab cakes at at whatever seafood restaurant they go to in the Seattle area. They don't care how many people die from cancer from all that shit. But sure as shit, 403 people in 2017 died because they were killed with a rifle. Now, here's what's also important. When you break these numbers down, this isn't just as simple as, you know, a criminal murdering an innocent person. These are often cases involving criminal-on-criminal violence. Now, I'm not dismissing that a couple criminals shot each other in South Chicago. I'm not dismissing that. That's a terribly tragic thing. But it is not the equivalent of a school shooting. So these are the numbers. And again, if you think in terms of numbers, A, and B, if you believe the numbers that the FBI publishes, then you should see rationally that the threat of the gun in general, but specifically the rifle, is nowhere near the same as other preventable deaths. For example, going back to healthcare, there's a concept in healthcare called five rights. It's been around for a while. I don't think the healthcare system gives a shit. But the concept behind five rights is that every patient has a right to make sure that some doctor ensures that they do not or are not given drugs with drug interactions. And I know this may seem complicated, but the idea is this. For a lot of people, especially people who are suffering from diseases or the elderly population, they're usually on one or more pharmaceuticals, usually many. And so the concept behind five rights is that the doctors give a shit, that they actually check the meds and make sure there are no interactions. I mean, there's more to it, but that's the gist of it. If you cared about children, human beings, any person in this country, you would do everything you could to ensure that your local hospital system had computer software in place, the technology, to make sure that the obvious interactions are not occurring. That's my advice. If you actually care about people, that's a nice place to start, and you're going to save a lot more than 400 fucking people. You will. You'll save a lot more than that. You'll save more than the 7,000 people killed with handguns or the other change, ash and trash of people killed with knives and shivs. You will save more than 17,000 people if you can work on the five rights problem in hospital systems. But like I said, I don't think gun control people give a shit about public safety. I don't think they care about public health. They use a lot of stupid rhetoric, but it's got nothing to do with that. For me, gun control is not about the numbers. If you were to come back to me and say, Dan, if we have, you know, free-for-all gun purchasing, if everybody and anybody can buy a gun, then you're just going to have, you know, what is it? The Wild West, Tombstone, you know, shootout at the OK Corral, cowboys riding down the street, shooting their six guns up in the air. All of this is bullshit. The most likely outcome of a free society is people treat each other with respect. It really does take a government to turn people on each other. But yeah, you could say that. But let's say you gave me a number and you said, Dan, if we allow people the freedom to defend themselves, 50,000 people will die every year. Now, I don't think that would ever happen. You know, that's almost twice as many soldiers as died in Korea. That's half as many people die every year from incompetence in hospitals. It's not a good number, but it's way worse than the current number. And if you came back and said, if we just allow people to purchase firearms without any restrictions, which means fewer restrictions than today, no requirement for concealed carry permits, no registration bullshit. Like I said, it would never get to 50,000, but the most likely outcome would be probably a more peaceful society. I think it was Heinlein that said that an armed society is a polite society, and I think Robert Heinlein was right. But whatever, even if you could prove it was 50,000, I would still support this because of the principle. I do not want to live in a society where anyone, I don't care if it's a government, I don't care if it's a corporation, I don't care if it's a local thug army, I do not want to live in a society where anyone has a monopoly on power. And the problem is that when you remove an individual's ability to defend themselves, you are creating monopolies. You're creating monopolies for criminals because all of a sudden the criminal situation gets a lot easier. Holy shit. You know, you don't have to be quite as concerned that the average civilian is going to shoot back. And from a game theory perspective, that's kind of awesome. But also, in terms of the police can basically act any way they want to. It's like Brazil right now. In Brazil right now, there is a standing order that allows a Brazilian public safety officer with a sniper rifle to murder another Brazilian if they believe that Brazilian is carrying a rifle. I didn't say shooting the rifle. I didn't say that this person actually ever committed any real crime other than having a rifle on their back or holding it in their hands. But if you as a Brazilian sniper see somebody with a rifle through your little fucking scope, God forbid it's not a broom, because in some of these poorer places it might as well be, you can shoot them. You can blow their fucking brains out. So when you do this, you just don't create monopolies for thugs and criminals. You create monopolies for the government. And, you know, every statist, especially the Marxist statist, will come back and say, well, Dan, social contract, the government has a right to a monopoly on violence. You can believe that. That's your belief system. And at least if you state it that way, you're owning up to it. I think that's monstrous. I think the outcomes in the 20th century, the hundreds of millions of people dead at the hands of their own government, is the best proof against that. But sure, you can stick to those fucking guns on your way to Auschwitz. I don't give a fuck. I really don't. The thing I think I would say the key to gun control in this current era, and in many ways, it starts in the late 60s. I think it was the 1968 Gun Control Act. But the last 50 years, more or less, of gun control have been principally about power and control. Okay, I believe that a long time ago, people, quote unquote, at the higher levels of society began to worry about, you know, what was going to happen in the coming decades. I think that there's plenty of reason to believe that they either thought that society would be under greater strain or simply wanted greater control or both. And so they began 50 years ago by spinning this tale that guns, which are really just, you know, objects made out of metal and plastic, that's what they are, that guns were somehow totems of violence, that they were, you know, anthropomorphized into these demons. A gun is like a hammer, like a chainsaw. A gun is like a bow and arrow. And do I think any of these things should be used to harm people? No. Do I think people should use these things to harm themselves? No. But in a free society, you have to be willing to take the risk that people will do stupid shit. Sometimes they will attach an assisted takeoff rocket to their Camaro and end up basically driving into the side of a mountain at 300 miles an hour. These things will happen in a free society. People will do stupid shit. And sometimes innocent bystanders will be killed by stupid shit. Since the war on terror began, as a kind of a side note, since the war on terror began, and this is coming from a study, I believe, out of Brown University. Let me just double check. Brown University's Watson Institute. Since the wars on terror began, about 38,000 civilians have been killed in Afghanistan, and approximately 200,000 civilians have been killed in Iraq. These are not soldiers. These are not people that were threatening us. These were just innocent bystanders. I don't know if anyone at all in the quote-unquote woolly-hearted liberal community gives a fuck. I mean, if you break those numbers down, let's call it 200K for Iraq and 240. So 240,000 deaths over the last almost 20 years. You know, it turns out to be somewhere around 15 to 20,000 people, innocent people, murdered by the U.S. government every fucking year since 2001. Now, please, by all means, approach a liberal douche with these numbers. Show them the quote. Show them it's Brown University. Holy fuck, that's a liberal fucking place. But they still won't think straight. They'll probably tell you something like, well, shit, we were fighting for freedom. You know, the dead people, the dead children, they don't get any more fucking freedom after that. They really don't. They're just a fucking red stain. So once again, I know I'm beating this issue quite badly. I have never believed, and I do not believe today, the outrage over guns has anything to do with public safety or saving lives or anything humanitarian. It is about power and control, and maybe even deeper than that still. Like, on a deeper level, it could be that, I don't know, I frankly would be guessing here, but it could be that people in the know are worried that our society is going to go through some sort of massive sociological event, for lack of better description, for economic reasons, for all sorts of reasons. If we, quote-unquote, suffered a major economic setback, and I'm saying this as a backdrop to one of the longest and weakest economic recoveries on record, the Obama recovery / Trump recovery has been one of the longest and weakest economic recoveries on record. And if you take U.S. GDP or even worldwide GDP and you subtract from it inflation, you end up with a number that is either slightly above zero or less than zero, which means that in all likelihood, for the last fucking decade, the world economy has been shrinking. The U.S. economy has been shrinking. And all of this has been papered over with money. So what happens when all of this, quote unquote, prosperity comes to a screeching halt? Well, I think that's the real thing about gun control. That's what it's about. There are people, and it's not a very large group of people. It's a fairly small minority. Sometimes it's called the 1%. But there are some really creepy, crony people that have made a lot of money off of political shenanigans and other kinds of crap. And when they look at the map and they say to themselves, okay, we've stolen probably as much as we can steal. The middle class is virtually destroyed, and poor people are basically becoming homeless. There's nothing left to steal. There's no more of a country to rape, okay? If you're one of these people, especially if you're a sociopath like them, and you're asking that sort of simple, rational question, what now? Gun control makes perfect sense. In fact, it's the only rational choice. You have to do something. And Donald Trump, for whatever you want to say about Donald Trump, is really not a defender of gun rights. He might be a slower car wreck. I mean, I can buy into the notion that Donald Trump might be a slow motion car wreck when it comes to gun control, but like with the bump stock, okay, the magical bump stock that turns the devilish black rifle into a kind of machine gun, which is total bullshit, but whatever, like the bump stock, Donald Trump has been very squishy on the issue of gun control. So it's about power and control. And I guess I would leave this here. I would suggest that you go to Zero Hedge. The article's still up there from Paul Craig Roberts. Read it yourself. Before I end this, I got to tell you right now, full disclosure, I don't currently have a gun in my apartment for financial reasons. My own personal economy started collapsing about a year ago, technically about 2 years ago. And when I moved back to Seattle, I wasn't in a place, a situation, an environment where even if I had a gun, I would have wanted one. It was kind of a crappy place I was staying at. So no, I don't currently have a gun. If you understand the Seattle culture, you'll realize that talking about guns in Seattle, I don't know how else to describe this. Talking about guns in Seattle is very uncomfortable. In 2012, I was working on a contract at Costco, which is their corporate headquarters in Issaquah, which isn't even Seattle. Like it's about, you know, an hour east of Seattle, 45 minutes, whatever. But I was working for Costco, and one day over lunch, and this was lunch, this wasn't, you know, a work meeting, people were talking about what they were going to do that weekend, and I mentioned that I might go to the gun range. That's all that I said. Okay? Within about an hour, I had a meeting with HR, okay, about talking about going to the gun range. So that tells you how much the gun issue is a topic of open discussion here in Seattle. It is not. If I ever get a hold of another gun, and this is all hypothetical for legal reasons, this is a counterfactual hypothetical, you know, let's just dream a little dream here. If I ever get another firearm, I'm not going to buy it through registration. I'm not saying I'll break the law in any explicit sense. I'm not going to steal it. But if I ever get another gun, I'm going to do private purchase. I'm going to go around every angle. I will never register another firearm for the rest of my fucking life. I will probably never get another concealed carry permit. I've had two of them, one in Seattle, one in Indiana. And I got them both when I still considered myself a libertarian, you know, and it seemed to me that, well, this is kind of a tiny thing to do. But no, I think that registration is the basic evil. No matter what they tell you, registering your gun is really stupid. Having them know that you have a gun, where they can collect the gun, is really stupid. And if you're one of these people that says, well, I registered my guns, but if they show up at my door, I'll just tell them that there was a break-in or accident. Well, you can do that. You can do that. But you're assuming a justice system that functions correctly. And that's an ignorant assumption. And that's the nicest way of putting that. Okay? In the real world, if you tell a cop that you don't know where those guns are, that cop will get a fucking, whatchamacallit, a warrant, not a warrant, but we'll get a search warrant. And that cop will return to your home, and you better sure as fuck have buried your gun someplace where the dogs can't find them. Because if you told the cop that, no, my guns were stolen, and they find them, yeah, they'll treat you with the same amount of respect as they treat the Constitution. That's what you have to look forward to. If you're going to do one of these, well, I accidentally lost my guns in a lake, or, you know, somebody stole them. So I guess that's where I'll leave it. To me, the smartest move you can make now and in the future is purchase your firearm through private sales. I mean person-to-person sales. If you know people with guns who need a little money, purchase your guns from them. Never for the rest of your life purchase a firearm that requires registration. It is the stupidest thing you can do. I can't even emphasize that point more. If you think that process is designed to protect you, you're a fucking moron. Good night.